Welcome to Digital Value Creation. This channel is a collaboration between me and my brother. He works in AI hardware, and I work for an AI software company. And we focus on how AI can create real value in our lives, at work, and in our communities.
And thank you for all the feedback we received after the last episode, especially about the 4E model. So we decided to make the 4 level of Gen AI mastery the framework for this episode. And we want to start with the recent Gen AI development based on where you are in your AI journey, be it in entertainment, education, efficiency, or whether you are in an effectiveness phase.
Well, some of you started calling us the AI brothers. Not sure we've earned that moniker yet. We'll see. But let's get it going this week. So let's talk about what caught our attention and focus in the last few weeks. As Arpad said, we'll start with our evolution from an entertainment level use of AI all the way up through education, efficiency, and effectiveness, and getting to real business outcomes. So what's top of mind for you, Arpad, in entertainment?
Well, last week was for me a hard news because my absolute favorite AI chatbot, Pi, is being acquired or taken over by Microsoft. And if you remember, I think you introduced me to it, Inflection, which was behind it, did an amazing job, not just creating an LLM, but do something that was a lot more efficient than GPT-4, almost the same level of performance. But more importantly, they created an engagement model that was fun to use, that made you stay there and have a conversation instead of just asking for an answer. And I mean, it was a brilliant move for Microsoft because they were able to acquire the company for a fraction of the valuation of a typical or similar AI company. I think they spent 600 some millions instead of the billions that the typical valuations are.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it makes sense, right? So we talk a lot about democratizing AI. It should be available to all, but it costs a lot of money to run these systems, right? So there are many, many ways to address this, but Pi was pretty much available to anybody to use, and somebody had to pay for it. And I think now we're seeing that who's going to pay for it is going to be business. But monetization concerns are real, and monetization concerns will change the company's strategy for democratization to probably more segmentation, in this case, to business. But you see some other examples where there are other models, like Mistra, right?
Yeah, so if I'm looking at it, super interesting, because as you know, Mistra went to market as a developer-first model. Actually, it was brilliant how they first released it and made it all open source, very, very engaging. Actually, even today, a lot of startups are actually shifted from Llama to Mistra as their foundational model. But even then, they are under pressure to figure out a business model that is sustainable. So right now, they had to launch both their open source, but also some of their commercial offerings.
This is going to be probably for the next couple of months and years. The biggest question is, I think many governments, smaller players, all want big tech to not to be the only player. But reality is they have the funding and the resources, and most of them have the underlying cloud and compute capability to run these large, complex LLMs. Mm-hmm. And they all take a slightly different strategy. So Microsoft, which is the most visible alone, let's start there, out there. So obviously they're investing into buying innovation. So obviously the investment in OpenAI is an example. They invested in Mistra. They just bought Inflection, as we talked about it. They're consolidating, and they're buying many more that doesn't even make the news. They're buying innovation as fast as they can to get ahead of this game, and they do have one huge asset, which is their Azure cloud environment, so they can load these models and have them perform at scale. And that's alternative to in-house development, which they would have the resources and money to do, but they choose to go at the outside. Amazon is doing similar things. They're acquiring new technology and new tech innovation, like their massive investment in Anthropic, which is probably over $3 billion now. Even though, again, they have in-house development that could move at some pace. It's much bigger than the Anthropic development team, yet that's the route they choose.
Although, you know what? It's very interesting that maybe what they are focusing on is how to make this model better or more integrated. I mean, I'm thinking about Microsoft that while they don't innovate the core models, seems that they now start to focus on making them easier to use, integrated more into a typical workflow. So I think the jury is out whether buying innovation and making it better or innovating yourself is going to be the key, which I think takes us to Google, which frankly puzzles me, because if I'm looking at all the advances in research, or not all, but most of them, a lot of them initiated from them.
We talked about it, right? Mustafa Suleiman was just bought by Microsoft from Google DeepMind. And he, for those of you who don't know, he was the CEO of DeepMind. And I think that's the story, right? So for 10 years, Google led AI development. Yet we're not even going to comment on the Gemini challenges in recent graphics adventures. But that's converting that capability into marketable products has been a challenge. Now they've come up with amazing set of tools around Gemini. It's being integrated in a lot of things. So and they're an amazing shop. But again, they decided to roll their own, build it out, make big bets in-house, and that has a different pace than Microsoft. It's interesting, you know, Adobe is one of the topics my brother and I don't quite agree on. I look at many of the old tech companies integrated AI tools, and they all look the same, and Adobe didn't look that different to me from Canva. What they were trying to do with or even for Microsoft PowerPoint and Microsoft Painter. I mean, just it's sort of the same kind of extension, but they had a master cut, which is using their old imaging assets and indemnification as a way to differentiate from everybody else. We had nothing to do with technology. So it was sort of a legal move. But
I think though it's more than just a legal move. As Thomas mentioned, this is something we disagree with, because I think their stroke of brilliance was removing friction from every part of the creative process. Because as a creative professional, you don't want to worry about copyright. You don't need to worry about whether somebody will question your creation. But also, you don't want to leave your environment. I mean, while a lot of creative professionals use Canva, and that's fantastic, the majority of especially professionals who work in agencies or in enterprises are grow up in the Adobe Creative Suite. And the fact that they integrated Firefly seamlessly and made sure that all the copyright concerns are addressed, I think that's a brilliant move that is creating a differentiation for them. But you're right, the jury is out. I mean, some of these dedicated tools are catching up. Canva does a phenomenal job integrating complete solutions, like with the recent acquisition of Affinity. So let's see what's happening.
Frictionless will sell, and it will consolidate users, which is, going back to Microsoft, they're doing that brilliantly, consolidating everybody into their platform, even though the same set of tools are available. You don't need Copilot. You could go to GPT-4, but you don't. It's already built in. But there's others. You're looking at something completely different, academia, right?
Absolutely. I mean, talking about academia and entertainment maybe in the same sequence, I mean, it's so funny that people start to analyze academic papers and they realize that you can start to find verbatim sentences that this language model training cutoff date is so-and-so date. So basically, what we start to see that not just that academic research start to leverage these models, but sometimes leverage these models in a very, very lazy way. But regardless of whether it's in a undetectable way, in a very obvious way, we start to see that Gen AI tools are starting to seep into content generation across the board. And I think that shows up in many areas in the internet. Thomas, you mentioned about an article you read about a professor in Denmark.
I want to give this guy credit, a guy named Nikolai Foss, a professor in Denmark of some college. He did an analysis, sort of a word frequency analysis on the frequency of words in social media and frequency of words that ChatGPT, guessing 4.0, outputs. And there were certain words that weren't common in social media until people started using GPT. One of them was delving into. you know, diving into a topic, right? So Delve Into wasn't used that much in social media posts, but after GPT came out, it's used all over. So there are going to be artifacts. So two things obvious. One is, yeah, people are using GPT to create social media posts, but the interesting thing is GPT through these mechanisms will change the language we use because people read these like, hey, I'm going to start using Delving Into. So it's interesting how this interplay will shift our language, our thinking maybe over time as more of these artifacts seep into our language.
And it's interesting because while some of these smarter, larger models, maybe Claude 3 or the newer version of GPT 4 Turbo or 4.5 when it comes out, they might be able to avoid these obvious blunders. However, what we also see that a lot of the smaller models have a rapid adoption, mainly because they are more affordable and they are faster. And performance-wise, it's super interesting that they start to get up both in popularity and sometimes in performance close to GPT-4. I mean, one of the latest comparisons show that Claude Haiku, which is only a 20 billion parameter model, reaches the performance of GPT-4 in some of the easier cases and a lot lighter footprint and compute. And while it might still not fit in a mobile device this year, I think it's a question of time and some of these models can run on mobile devices. For example, I hope some of you have seen the advertisement from Samsung S24. I mean, it's amazing that they adopted Gemini Nano. They run on a mobile device. Right now, you can call someone. I speak in English, and they see what I'm saying in Spanish. They can respond in Spanish, and I see a real-time transcript. So I can communicate in many languages. And this is just generation one. Actually, Samsung just extended it from the flagship phone for some of the others. And rumor has it that even Apple is looking at leveraging Gemini Nano in their upcoming releases.
Apple. Both of us are lifetime Apple users. You know, we're Mac users. Where is Apple? Where is Apple in Gen AI? You might ask. Yes, we've seen the announcements on MM1, which is right now a research paper. Apple is launching their own LLM eventually. But ultimately, Apple decided to go the way of licensing, which is somewhat disappointing. We expected some amazing device to come out from Apple. So it looks like, at least as we can decipher it, they're going to probably license a version of Gemini, probably the Nano, the same way it ends up in being in the Samsung phones. And hopefully over time that this vision research paper turns into a product around MM1. Anything with M1 sounds good to me because we've seen that happening with chips. And, you know, maybe they surprise us with the GPU. You never know. But let's shift from Apple to media, right? So what's happening with Gen AI in media? So there's a lot of excitement. So we're seeing, we're not seeing Sora yet. The word, we're hearing all about Sora, so it hasn't come out. But
we see the 60-second demo version of it.
We've seen the Gemini 60-second version, remember? So we're hearing about Sora, but there are other tools like HyperPika that are providing text-to-video. And it's pretty exciting if you think about the potential. I mean, what these tools are going to look like right now, apart from the commercials, I experimented with Hyper and Pika. You can generate maybe a 4-second video before subscribing. However, the potential is that you will be able to generate commercials. You can do training videos. You can do a variety of video assets. And that may change advertising the same way as my brother talked about Adobe. You will be able to generate content has a broad set of use cases. So that could be pretty big. We know it from DALL-E that there are issues with maintaining continuity from characters, from products, or any objects, frankly, that happen in the screen. But I couldn't be more excited. I think when Sora comes out, it's going to have another DALL-E kind of moment.
Absolutely. That's And some of the videos show that it seemed to maintain some level of continuity, at least within the same generation, which is so much so that I just read the article that Tyler Perry put a significant, I think it's $800 million studio expansion on hold after he saw Sora, because he said that will probably change how we will approach a generation of video content. And whether he was fast or visionary or too early. I mean, the jury is out there, but there is definitely a lot of question about what is going to be the impact for the media industry as these tools mature and we are able to scale.
So we're intentionally not going to talk about deep fakes and faking politician voices and all of this, because that's not for this channel. But voice-to-voice generation, text-to-voice generation is going through a revolution. And those tools are available now. So the pioneer in this space has been 11 Labs that created the ability to generate pretty amazing text-to-voice and now voice-to-voice. So we could, and I was even thinking about trying to do that as part of this channel, we could just continue this conversation in Spanish, then Japanese and Italian. You never know. We may do this. But the point you can, and it's going to be our voice, our accent even, as we speak. And with some of these tools, I mean, it's incredible that you can just have a 15-second sample of my voice. So my voice is not in the training set. It's never been inside. But 15 second of fine tuning is basically what it is, or RAG, I don't know what we would characterize it, is enough for this model to be able to absorb it and represent my voice. And it's going to be, the applications are enormous. Voiceovers, media, training videos, dubbing movies, which is, how big is the entertainment industry globally? So this could be staggering. News media is going to be able to do this. I actually have a very personal one. So we actually had our parents tell their life story on video for us in Hungarian. My brother and my kids, they speak some Hungarian. Their next generation probably won't. They'll be English speaking or Spanish speaking in your case. How will they hear this story in our parents' voice? And now they can. So there are going to be applications that are actually going to be quite uplifting.
So we covered a lot of topics about entertainment. For me, the question is, what does it really take to go from entertainment to deeper in a journey of AI mastery? What does it take to get to education?
I mean, it may not be a fair way to say it, but until you really understand how these tools operate, you're pretty much in an entertainment phase. You're kicking the tires. Then you move up to education. You really understand the broader implication, not just the technology, but its impact on the business, on the culture, on processes. So there's this great new book from Ethan Mollix coming out this week, as we're recording it. So this book is titled Co-Intelligence. And in this book, and Ethan is, he published with Harvard. He's currently at Wharton Business School. And he his whole book is about using AI as a coworker, collaborator, a coach, a partner in our life. So being our extension. And he uses a ton of examples, as we see from the preview, because it's coming out in 2 days as we record it. How we can work together with AI, with smart machines, and we must master the skill to use them better. And there's a lot of complexity around this. And the better you are in understanding how to use this tool even better, the better your ability to influence your environment. So it's a great book. I can't wait to see it and read it. But I think you, Arpad, you met Ethan, right?
Yeah, I felt very lucky when I was in San Francisco. We had a chance to spend a whole afternoon with Ethan, as he was one of our actually most engaging speaker in a Wharton AI event. And I think what's unique about him, and why I'm super excited when Amazon finally delivers the book, is he really brings together education in a very accessible fashion. And I mean, he's just a fascinating and entertaining speaker as well. But I think he was the one that made me think a lot about what is happening in academia, what is happening in education, and what is the fundamental shift that happens. I'm on an advisory board of another institute, and we just talked to their president on the challenge that in the past, life was fairly simple. Academia always does two things very well, research and education. And we used to follow a simple sentence that first, there was fascinating academic research, then it turned into a delivery of class content, and then business professionals learn how to turn it into applications and make a difference. This completely changed. Right now, we go from research to application, not in 5 or 10 years, but in months. And that catches a traditional education delivery basically unprepared, because by the time a university comes together and decide what is next year's curriculum, optimizes the class schedules, it's I wouldn't say it's obsolete, but it's not as critical. So I love Nathan because while he's formally engaged with academia, he's out there, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's in different forum, educating and making this available. And I think most academic institutions need to evolve and not just think about launching an AI course, but how can they involve AI in everything they teach? So I'm very excited about how education will have to evolve if they want to stay relevant, at least traditional education. And I think that's not just education. It has an impact on the job market as well.
It's everywhere. Like you're talking about how academia is 6 months, 1 year behind the pace of AI. All of us are. I remember 6 months ago, you could get a six-figure job just doing prompt engineering. And, you know, I don't know, 500,000 people took courses from Vanderbilt, the Vanderbilt courses, and they got real jobs. And those, now it's changed. Now it's a required skill. So you no longer get a huge uplift, and that's just 6 months. So maybe the fine tuning jobs or the reg jobs get next 6 figures, but that's going to change as well. And there's a whole shift in the job market, like literally in months, where you may have been hired for that six-figure job, and that is going to be questioned. And if you cannot maintain your edge, what's going to happen?
I mean, it's super interesting that, as you mentioned, I just reminded me an article I read last week on Wall Street Journal, where, at least in the Bay Area, tech job seekers without AI skill, now they have a whole new reality. Basically, it's either lower salaries or basically fewer roles. Actually, that's the first time since the pandemic where starting salaries for coders are falling in the Bay Area. Actually, it's back to pre-pandemic level. And mainly because AI is no longer just a differentiator. It's not just an accelerator you can use because you know how to use GitHub Copilot. It's something that's expected. And it's expected that because of that, it somewhat democratizes access and increases competition. As it's famously said in the World Economic Forum last year, AI is not taking your job, but people who know AI will. And we start to see that evidence already in the Bay Area.
So how do we stay ahead? How do we get better? We're beyond entertainment and education, moving on to efficiency and effectiveness. What is that journey like? We'll cover that in our next episode. Looking forward to seeing you there. Talk soon.